previously.tv podcast network.
This is The Bladder Presents, Summary Judgment, Episode 3, Law & Order True Crime, The Menendez Murders, Season 1, Episode 4. Hello, welcome back to The Bladder Presents, Summary Judgment. I'm running the Good Cop, Bad Cop with my co-host, Tara Ariano. Hello, Tara.
Oh, hi.
I'm Sarah D. Bunting, and here, per TV Guide, is our opening statement. As we really dig into the behind-the-scenes motions and machinations behind the case, Eric and Lyle begin to divulge details of the abuse they suffered at the hands of their parents. However, a lack of evidence leaves Leslie and Jill to wonder how they will convince a jury. And there was this was gone over at some length, but let's go over the parts that we liked about the episode in our Star Witnesses section. It was an unbalanced one for me this time. I disliked more than I liked, but we still had a pretty good list. Tara, why don't you start us off?
Well, I just wanted to say, for the sake of the people like me who didn't follow the case when it was first happening, like, this is the most lurid of the episodes, other than the ones where we actually see corpses, because they get into a lot of detail about exactly what happened. So specifically, Eric was physically abused and sexually abused by his father starting around age 6. And apparently so was Lyle, but it stopped when he got to be about 12, he says. And in addition to that, Jose also, did he say that Jose made him do things to Kitty, or Kitty made him?
He said Kitty made him.
Okay.
But Lyle said Kitty made him.
Right. Yes. Sorry.
And then that was, but I think we're given to understand, like, much of the episode is devoted to sort of inducing Lyle to admit that it was Jose who molested him and not actually Kitty, who was no great shakes, but I think.
I see.
I think that they, in terms of presenting a, like, unified theory of self-defense, needed Lyle to admit that it was actually Jose.
Right.
But then at a certain point, Jose turned all his attention to Eric, and that abuse continued per Eric until about 2 weeks before the murders occurred.
And on threat that Jose would kill him if he told anyone.
Right. And also that he had gotten into UCLA and wanted to live on campus. And Jose was like, no, you have to continue this hell 4 nights a week or whatever his requirement was. So that's where we are in
right.
the case. And as you see in the Chirons on the episode, that, like, almost 2 years passes in this episode. And, like, that's kind of how long it takes for Lyle to finally say that it was Jose and that he was also abused.
Right.
Yeah. It takes a while.
The other things that happen in this, well, and then, so that's where Jill and Leslie arrive at the, Leslie and then Jill agrees, arrives at the defense of imperfect self-defense, that they went about it the wrong way, but that Lyle and Eric were defending their actual lives from their abusive parents.
Right.
In addition to that, there's also, like, they sort of gloss over it if people don't know that, like, earlier in the episode, Leslie is accusing Ira, the current LA County DA, of, like, grandstanding on the Menendez case to try and win his election. And then, like, several scenes later, it's like, and now there's a new DA. So guess that didn't work. But this is where we bring in Gil Garcetti, who is the new DA.
Correct.
Played by Mark Moses.
Yes.
The great Mark Moses.
Yeah. And we will get to him. But yeah, like, this is how I was at first, like, wait, her name's Ferrero? But it actually is Bozanich. Like, enough time goes by in this episode that she gets married and changes her name. So,
right. Yeah.
Yeah. If it feels long, it's because it is.
Yeah. It's crazy because you don't really think about that when you're watching a legal procedural. They compress so much. They compress the timeline of a real case so, so much that, you know, they have to gloss over all the things that were happening in the meantime. But, like, yeah, we arrive at Garcetti's election and the LA riots and all this stuff happens. Well, the events of this episode are taking place. Like, it's a lot.
Yeah. And it's especially notable given, like, in the, you know, in actual like Law and Order mothership that it's always notable when you see the Chirons, like it's like 2 or 3 weeks later when the case that the law portion was investigating is going to trial in the order portion. And you're like, no, it's like a year.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, so that's all the background. So what I liked about this episode, they're subtle about making the real culprit here toxic masculinity. Like, it's not just Jose and his bullying nature, but there's also a clip of Kitty talking to her psychiatrist and saying that her solution for when Eric woke up in the night upset about by a nightmare that she made him take a cold shower because that's what her father made her brothers do when they would have nightmares when she was a kid. So like, it's notable to me that she says that's what her father made her brothers do, not that she was made to do that. So it's like, this is a thing to toughen up boys specifically so that they don't cry in the night. Like, this is a long, I thought it was a smart and economical way of showing like the ways that Kitty was also complicit possibly in what's going on. Like, she has her own shit that is wrong about how to bring up kids.
Oh yeah. And they definitely mention, not that I was necessarily a fan of this, that Leslie's like, I don't think she had a maternal bone in her body, which I'm not sure that was demonstrated, but dysfunctional, right, definitely she was. And there's a, I just lost my train of thought. Oh, right. There's a line that someone has about, I think one of the shrinks, about Kitty feeling as though Jose had taken the boys away from her. And there was like this weird romantic overtone to like her jealousy and territoriality about Jose. So that was interesting.
Anyway,
speaking of the shrinks, one of them is total ginger. Hey, it's that guy, Raphael Sbarge. I love that guy. He's always a sign of quality in a procedural, and he's been in several that I've watched. So it's good to see him.
Yes, you may know him as Jiminy Cricket from Once Upon a Time, or I may know him as a guy I vaguely recognized at Forever 21 at the Beverly Center one time.
Hey, it's that guy's. Can't be at the spendy stores. They gotta be at Forever 21.
Yep.
Buying ruffly skirts?
He was there with his daughter, I believe.
Gotcha.
Yeah. I also liked the brief scene of after the ruling comes down that they can include all of the Ozeal tapes of Ozeal giving a press conference about it, being all pissy, and Mrs. Ozeal good wifing beside him while he's denying all of the preposterous stuff that Judulon said he did, like mind control, like just her standing there in her sensible beige on beige suit while he's talking all this crazy shit about his mistresses. It was very funny to me.
Yeah. This is not in our rundown, but there was not enough Ozeal and Judulon in this episode, but we did get to see the Judalubes again.
Yep.
When she was talking to Diane Sawyer, and they were still flawless.
Yeah.
Also flawless was Leslie's completely over the top reaction watching either this press conference or some other one where Ozeal was saying that he wishes Lyle and Eric luck and hopes for the best for them and hopes they get help or whatever it is. And she's like, if he really wants to help them, tell him to go kill himself. Like, oh,
that- on camera, she says this, like they catch her coming out of a courthouse and she says this to reporters, like, fucking Leslie. I love her.
I know. Yeah. She's pretty rad.
And we already mentioned it, but yes, Gil Garcetti comes in and it's Mark Moses and we get, I guess it's a Mad Men reunion. Not that they had any scenes, but when he's meeting Pamela.
Oh yeah.
Him and Reaser. Yeah. I mean, as I said, like only technically, not that they ever cross paths, but I'm always glad to see him. He's great.
Yeah, so. Agree. And I had totally blocked out that Reaser was even on Mad Men, and I'm kind of doing a semi rewatch. So thank you for reminding me so that I could just skip over her.
Sorry.
Speaking of aggravating factors, here's some stuff we liked a bit less about the episode.
Leslie goes to, is it Leslie or Jill? I forget. Jill, I think.
I think it's Jill.
Goes to Eric's old high school and talks to his drama teacher who tells how great he was in class until Jose made him quit, I assume for toxic masculinity reasons.
Yeah, it's
but
too girly reasons. Yeah, probably.
Right. But we also get an extended flashback of him delivering a soliloquy from Richard III. And there's just so much hand acting. Like, I get that he was trying. It's funny to me when actors are directed to act like they're bad at acting, when, especially when, as in this case, like the actor is not that great to begin with, like how much they overcompensate to show that they're amateurish doing it. It's anyway, it's a very funny, swirl of techniques.
Acting meta. Yeah, I wasn't sure if like, because I found that very true to life. And sometimes one of the things I clock actors for who are not trying to seem like they're bad is having too much like flapping going on. Like James Vanderbeek consistently had this problem in Dawson's Creek that he was not blocked constructively. Like you don't always have to have your hands in motion.
Right.
And it's very high school drama club is what I used to say about it. So I thought that was sort of like it could have been purposeful.
Yeah, true.
But the next issue on our list is one that I put down, which maybe one scene in which Eric isn't crying. Like, I feel a little bad mentioning this because, first of all, I will give Gus Halper, who plays Eric, credit. He is clearly able to summon tears and have red welling eyes at the drop of a hat. I mean, maybe he's aided by glycerin. It looks pretty natural to me.
Yeah.
And also the Eric role in these projects is always pretty one note in this way. But I just really wish that they would give him another note, even if it's not necessarily true to life, because he's right. Just smeary, teary all the time.
Yeah.
He is not as bad as the cheap Marilyn wig on Lolita Davidovich in the flashback scene that she gets this week. It's actually not bad. It's flattering on her. But the role of Kitty does not necessarily call for mid-century glamour when she's at the shrink. I don't know. Was not a fan.
It was a lot of luck. We also get a scene. This is so early on in the episode that, you know, we've already talked about him getting replaced, but Leslie storming into the original DA's office and yelling at him for trying to run his campaign through the Menendez case. And apparently, like, there were supposed to think there was some shot that they might have a plea deal because of the abuse claims that have just come out. But like, she screwed it up by being a hothead. Like, I doubt it. First of all, I doubt that there ever was a chance at a plea deal. Second, I doubt that she would be that unstrategic about it.
Yeah, I feel like that's a writing thing in this particular project. And it keeps coming up in ways that I don't care for. Like, I'm just not loving the whole, like, she keeps repeating that we owe it to these boys.
Right.
Kind of stuff. And I like it when she's a hard ass and, you know, like a zealous advocate, as she should be and as her job requires her to be.
Right.
But I feel like this is a writer thing that's like trying to soften her up or give her a rationale for defending them zealously, which she doesn't need because that's her job. Like, I would like her to be a little more cynical and less like over identifying on the mom tip.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's a lot of mom stuff that we weren't crazy about in this episode.
Yeah, well, yes, the only button I'll say before we move on to the next one, even though that was an excellent segue, sorry, is that I buy that she would get that mad. I don't buy that she would do it in a way that didn't help the case, which that doesn't. Like, it does. You put on that show before the cameras. Like,
I
just don't believe that she would be that irrational.
Yeah, agree.
That's
or in that self-destructive a way. Like, I agree. We agree.
Anyway, speaking of moms, I don't care about Jose's mom. Sorry. Like, we get a scene of them moving out of the house, which I guess is so that we know what happened to it, which I don't really care about that either. But like, every time you see this old lady, she's just crying and upset. Like, of course, you know, like what am I learning about this story by having to see her reaction to it? Like, she has nothing to contribute. She doesn't know anything about what was happening. She's not interesting. Sorry.
Yeah, no, it's true. Especially since a lot of the episode was given over to how many of the cousins did know.
Yes.
What was going on. But I mean, in this like very darkly hilarious bit where the first cousin to crack says that he pinky swore that he wouldn't say anything. Like,
yeah,
he was like, well, I did pinky promise. And Leslie's like, I'm familiar. Checks out. Which I thought was great.
And I super don't care about the adoption, which is apparently still a thing going on.
Oh, God. And this, I mean, there's a lot of like, there's a lot of long act outs and sort of repetition about what they're trying to do in this episode here. And we'll, I have questions about that for you, which we'll get into in a minute. But as they're watching smoke, like a very sort of photogenic column of smoke rise from the riots, they actually make Edie Falco say this in our only clip.
Oh my God, Tim. What kind of world is this for a kid? All this hate and cruelty. This baby we're adopting, what if we can't protect him?
Are you fucking kidding? Like, really? And you know, she almost sells it, but then the siren's going and she's like, remember that baby that we're adopting?
Yeah.
Let's find some parallels in my situation. Like, let's fucking not. God.
Yes. Is a woman who makes her living as a defense attorney really going to be having this reaction to like, I'm not going to sit here and act like the riots weren't bad. They were bad, but like, she meets bad people every day of her life. This is what she's made her career on. Like, I don't buy for a second that she would have this melodramatic reaction to this event.
I don't either. And what did you, this wasn't on our list, but what did you think of her going to see her pops that she hadn't seen in however many years or decades?
Yeah, that scene made me wonder how much like the real Leslie Abramson was involved in this and like made them put in stuff like that. Like, I guess the reason was, you know, to make her appreciate the relationship that Lyle and Eric have with their family and that they have to be honest with them and confess to them directly, which happens. But also like what? Like, she's not the story here really, except in as far as she is involved with the case. So
well,
that
but
seemed
on
like
the
a
other
waste
hand,
of time
you could also say that she is the story, but
right.
All of these little background things that are supposed to either explain, justify, or rationalize her decision to defend her clients zealously, once again, that doesn't require rationalization, and I don't think these lengths of backstory would be gone to for a male character. Just don't.
No, for sure not. I agree. Absolutely.
And I don't
not.
Know on whom that is, but I'm finding it a bit distracting. Falco is doing a great job.
She is.
But like, if her dad was not a lawyer, I don't care what he has to say. He sucked as a dad. Like, she's not required to be able to relate directly to her clients. She's doing fine. Ugh.
Right.
So yeah, I didn't care for that.
I mean, I do think there are situations where one would question the motives of a lawyer who was defending a particular client. For example, ripped from our own headlines, Lisa Bloom, the daughter of Gloria Allred, defending Harvey Weinstein for a while. Like, that's relevant because her other cases have all been, you know, squarely feminist cases where she's defended, you know, accusers of Bill O'Reilly and stuff like that. So for her to turn around and then be like, and I'm also defending this guy for a while, like, that's relevant. But in this case, like, you're right. I didn't mean that Leslie's not the story in the sense of like, she's at the center of the case. I just meant like her personal life is
well,
not
right.
Germane.
This isn't like the Abramson Chronicles, although
right.
I mean, I guess I'd watch that. It is Edie
I
Falco.
Would do.
But just giving her like these namby lines musing about all the hate and cruelty in the world. And then it's like, well, let's make it explicit that she also had a, you know, she had a difficult father.
Yeah.
Or slash absent father who didn't protect her. Like, I just don't think that this is something people even think about doing for a male character. And
no,
if you're going to buy
I
into
agree.
Telling this story about these two shitbirds, basically. I mean, I am kind of coming around on the abuse allegations, which frankly I never believed before.
Mm-hmm.
And this, you know, this series is having the benefit of making me rethink that. So there's that.
Yeah. But, well, they come up with photos this time. So yikes.
Oh yeah. And I think I did know about that evidence, but I also felt like I didn't believe that either. Or it was just like, they're running around the pool naked. Who cares? And it was
right.
not that,
no,
apparently.
Not that. All right.
Allegedly. All right. So maybe I like this episode a little better than I thought, but let's get into the verdict. I should note that this is we got a screener for this one randomly. Why do you think that is?
To be completely honest, I think they just forgot last week. I think we're going to keep getting screeners. I think someone just screwed up last week because NBC has been like blasting us with screeners for everything. I didn't think we were going to get any screeners for Will and Grace, and we've gotten all of them so far.
Huh?
Yeah, and every episode of Great News, every episode of The Brave, every episode but one, except for even for This Is Us, like they're giving us everything. So I think that's what
I think it's probably what did you think? Indigenous Peoples Weekend thing, and they just forgot.
Oh yeah, that too. Right.
I hope you're right. Mm-hmm. This one, like I said, having some issues with the characterization of Leslie and time that is being spent, you know, making her more feminine or whatever the fuck, and time that is spent on mom stuff that should be spent on Kitty mom stuff and not Jose's mom and not Leslie's mom or Leslie being a mom or any of that stuff. This was my least favorite episode so far, and I think it was because there wasn't enough Ozeal and Crazy Judalon. Would you agree?
I would right down the lane. I agree with everything you said.
Alrighty then. Well, that's it for us on the Blotter Presents Summary Judgment. Next time, Judge Mark Green grants a petition allowing the court proceedings to be broadcast on television, bringing a heightened level of public scrutiny to the case. When the prosecution's star witness, Dr. Ozeal, takes the stand, his questionable ethics and motives threaten to destroy his credibility, and those Sam the Eagle faces that Josh Charles is making probably aren't helping, but I love them. You can admit The Blotter Presents to your social media circle at Blotter Presents on both Facebook and Twitter. I'm Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Tara Ariano. She's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. This has been The Blotter Presents Summary Judgment, and until next time, we are adjourned.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.